the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Now from the Nowcast Network Studios, here's Mike.
Hey, welcome to the Audio Nowcast. My name is Mike Rodriguez, and before we get going, let me introduce the guys. Over here, on my right, we've got Martin Page.
Hi, Mikey. I have returned.
He has returned. And next to him, we've got Scott Gershon.
Hey, Mike.
And next to him, we have Bobby Summerfield.
Oh, what?
eating cookies.
And next to him, we have Andrew Sheps.
Hi, Mike.
And last but not least, we have Rob Arbiter.
Hello, Mike.
Ladies and gentlemen, we are all here for a podcast.
I'm not sure if we're all here.
I mean, it's been a while. It's been a long time.
It's very emotional, isn't it, really?
No, not really.
That just means...
I feel ill.
Yes.
If that helps.
That just means we're all unemployed right now.
There you go. Self-unemployed.
No, but it's great to see everybody. It's great to see all you guys. All you guys, you're all looking good and dapper and ready to go.
A little bit older. Just no doubt about that, yeah.
I'm actually younger. I got younger.
Have you?
I've been eating MSG.
How do you do that?
Eat MSG. It's great.
You're just going the other way, huh?
Well, hey, listen, the Audio Nowcast, for those that you that are listening for the first time, we talk about the audio industry, and we have people here from the various places. We got songwriters and sound designers and mixers and then posers. And we won't say anything who plays that role, Bobby. But
See?
Okay. He's still eating. He's still eating.
When I finished having my dinner, I'm going to give you a good bollocking.
I know you are.
How's the language been since I've been gone? Have you been able to tone it down? Or
been excellent.
Still...
No, it's been beeping great.
No, beeping great.
Well, hey, gang, before you roll, let's just catch up really quick. I know, Andrew, you were working on a dream project for a lot of people. Why don't you explain a little bit what you were doing during the last 2 months or so?
Well, I was mixing about half of the new Metallica record.
Woo!
And by the way, we're all making the metal heads.
That's right.
Hey, it's too much metal for one hand.
Right. We're all doing that. So.
Rock and roll! Hey, and how was that? That must have been a fantastic experience.
It was amazing. It was great. So.
And how was it trying to manage your middles? You know, I mean, I bet that was just
everything louder than
hell.
Everything else all the time.
Wow.
It was. And I have to say, I'm really glad I mixed it on an analog desk because I pushed the crap out of it and the desk did my compression for me and made it work.
Wow.
And I don't know how I would, I mean, I'm sure I would have figured it out, right. But I don't know how I would have done it.
Just really quick, why don't you explain some of the gear that you used to mix this?
Well, I mixed it at my place, so it's a Neve 8068, which at this point is 64 input. And then kind of the usual old outboard gear, a lot of 1176s, some API stuff, API EQs and compressors, a lot of Yuri things, and then some newer stuff like some of the newer Aphex boxes, especially on toms, or if you need one thing to really poke out, the Aphex 204. But pretty old school. I mean, early 80s technology.
Were you playing back from Pro Tools? Or did
yeah.
They, okay.
Yeah.
So not that early then.
No, not tape. Not tape.
Which, you know, that would have...
No, but he used Pro Tools 3.0, so it was kind of...
Yeah, it sounds
But did you track on tape and then convert to Pro Tools?
No, this was all done on Pro Tools.
Oh, wow.
Good. Yeah.
That's good. Well, you know what we'll do is when the album comes out, you know, we'll do another podcast where you can really get into the nuts and bolts of what you did on the songs.
Yeah.
You know, because
actually, we could play the album and have
it's
you
out
sing
soon.
Along.
Now, the cool thing is, first of all, it's out really soon because usually you finish mixing a record and then you've forgotten you worked on it by the time it came out. But this comes out September 12th.
Wow.
So by
wow.
the time you put this thing up on the
yeah, it'll
site,
be posted the 14th.
It'll be out in a couple of weeks. And it also comes out simultaneously as an album and as a download for Guitar Hero 3. So you can play the entire album on Guitar Hero the same day it comes out.
Wow. So I know what you're going to do. You're going to go to like EB Games. And since you know the songs, you're just going to, you know, look really good.
You're insane. apparently, they brought one of the songs down just to show the band so they could see the graphics and stuff. And some kid from the game company played one of the songs on Expert, and it was just ridiculous. Because the other thing is, this is very old school Metallica. So the shortest song is 5.5 minutes. Most of them are over 8.
Wow.
And there are a bunch of solos. And so it's brutal. I wouldn't want to play it. Wow. Even on easy, I couldn't do it.
So really light listening then. Something
yes.
You want to put on
it's,
when you're live.
You got to be ready.
It's dinner party, sir.
Yeah, it's 78 minutes full on. But it's great. It's great.
Oh, wow. And Martin.
I didn't do a Metallica album. No.
I don't believe you.
What have you been up to the past couple of months? I know you're.
I've been writing, Mike. I've been, the biggest thing is that the amount of money you offered me to come back was really fantastic. So that lured
me
back.
Twice what he's getting.
Yeah. No, I've been writing, just supporting the record and, being in my studio locked away again. You know, it's been a really good time of, in fact, when I finished this record and promoted it for a while, I suddenly found a lot of other songs were popping up. So I've been back in the writing mode. I'm literally about three songs away from finishing another record, which is unusual for me. So it's a good feeling.
Wow. Well, you know, we're going to get into a little bit later on in the podcast. We're going to get into kind of a recap of how your release went and some of the things that are coming up. Because I do know it was pretty exciting being there with you while some of this stuff was happening.
Yeah, it's been a really great time. I mean, it's been the first time I've ever done anything independent. So it's been a great experience. And it's been, I think what I found the most exciting about it is you don't look upon a record as an instant time, you know, 1 month and then it's over. You look at this over a period of a year because you're dealing with the internet, and it's been steady and steady and steady, and actually word of mouth has made the record do very well indeed. So I've been very happy.
Well, that's great. Before we talk to Martin and a little bit more, I wanted to bring up a couple things that were that are happening out in the tech world and get your guys, you know, opinion to weigh in on this. And the first thing is I got asked by a friend of mine whose son is wanting to get into electronic music. He wanted to know what he wanted to get set up with. And he was talking about a keyboard, a controller, and some modules and things like that. And then he asked me, you know, and what's this MIDI thing? You know,
I said,
I said, oh,
it's a drink.
You mean MIDI? And I said, well, you know what? And
I didn't know that. I was like, no, I use MIDI.
Take notes.
Thanks, Mike, for telling me that.
Does MIDI still exist?
But that's just it. I there was a term I hadn't talked about MIDI in forever, and that used to be my gig when I was on the road and building these massive setups. And I'm just thinking, wow, MIDI is just gone by the wayside. And I told him, you know what?
Yeah, not true.
Don't tell my studio that.
No. But
if you're starting from the ground up now, though,
you don't need it. That's what I was saying. I mean, it's still alive and a lot of people use it, and I use it on some of my stuff, but really it's going out the door.
The funny thing is, though,
it's on its way out, I think.
But the communication, like if you buy a USB keyboard and hook it to your computer, it's just doing MIDI over the USB.
That's right.
It's just a different kind of cable.
No, that's true.
It's just.
But you don't have to think about it.
You don't have to think
about it unless you want more than one synthesizer. I mean, if you're not going to build a USB network of synths if you're going to have.
But you could.
Kind of
you could. Everything feeding in.
You just pop them all in a hub. And,
well, yeah. Here's the thing. When I was talking to him about
theoretically, yes, I've tried it. It doesn't work as easily as it sounds.
When I was talking to him about MIDI and how he didn't need to use it, at one time it was, you know, you see the evolution of technology. It always moves forward. But yet at the same time, you know, you look at MIDI and actually for what it was, it worked pretty darn good. I mean, it was something that once you got the concept, it was, you know, anybody could use it, from songwriters like Martin and your studio being MIDI and with your early sequencers with Opcode and things like that to Rob, some of the gigantic MIDI systems we worked on with Stevie, you know, and it's just been a really pretty decent technology. It's not always been the best, you know, there was always been people who were trying to, you know, go faster and go parallel.
Well, but that was always the thing with it. It was fast enough that it worked, and it was never implemented fully. You know, there were always those two extra pins in the connector, and they talked about what the next MIDI 2.0 spec was going to be.
Right, that just never happened.
So from the very beginning, everybody knew what the limitations were, but it was so simple in terms of what it did do that done. You know, if I hit a key over here, that guy knows I hit it. And how hard. And
I'm still using DCB, though. Am I missing something? Did I?
Yeah.
Wow.
Got the Oberheim setup.
Well, it's just, you know, I felt really kind of sad because DCB. I've been in situations where, you know, I made my living for a long time just off of working with MIDI. And And
well, a lot of people used to make their living shoeing horses too, but I mean, you know, it's just been progress.
Then the MIDI shoeing.
It's kind of like, you know, seeing an old friend go, because I know it's never going to go back.
He's still around.
Time.
He's still around.
Hey, but, before MIDI, I think she'd get all those musicians to play the parts.
Oh, God forbid.
Yeah, I know.
Well, no, you could still, but see, that's just it, you know. I mean, a lot of times back then, I was putting together systems and people were still playing it because they just needed to talk to a lot of keyboards. Like when I went out
with Rick Wakeman doesn't look as cool anymore, you know. He had all those keyboards surrounding him. And now he just has one controller and that's all he needs.
Yeah, he's calling up sounds on a motif or something. It's not the same.
But I don't know, you know.
Or his lapbook.
The smallest rig that I went out with, but was. Probably the most important was when I was touring with Martin, because we had a small little, you know, sequencer with a couple modules, and that was it. But it was bulletproof. It worked great every day and never had any problems with it. And, you know, I know you could do that exact same thing now on a laptop, but I don't know if I have that kind of
confidence. You have multiple laptops, and if one doesn't work, you just pop the other one open.
But you know what else? As everybody gets more and more into virtual instruments, I mean, you really miss out on some cool stuff. You know, if you want to be able to use like a Prophet synth from Dave Smith, or you want to be able to use, you know, some Mini Moog or whatever, any kind of analog module that is only going to be MIDI, if you don't do that just because you don't have MIDI on your laptop, whatever, you're missing out on a really cool palette of sounds. You can't do everything with virtual instruments as much as I love them.
But you know what's great, though, is like the Prophet 5, when it first came out, was $5,000-$6,000. And now you can buy a Prophet 5 for, you know, $295.
Yeah, but it doesn't sound the same as the one that you can still buy for $2,000, which is actually a true analog. So for anybody who really, really cares about it being the coolest sounding thing, the plugins are great. I use them all the time.
They're pretty close, though, aren't they?
No, not if you really compare them. Apples and apples. They're really not close.
They don't sound the same at different volumes. They just don't behave
the same.
They're
really not close.
They're great little snapshots. Somebody gave me an analogy once. They're like little digital pictures. If you take a picture of a horse running down the field, and many of them, they look like a horse running down the field, but they're all little bits that don't, you don't smell the horse.
There's something to be said for not smelling the horse.
That's a very good point, actually.
Actually, the plugins I'm using
are
just
analogy.
I just smell the horse.
I'm just using the horse shoe kind of continuum.
I've been able to do the comparisons between some synths and their software versions, and they're really, really different. And a lot of that comes from the analog circuitry of the synth. It might be that the DSP inside, if it's a digital synth, would be the same, but there's something about the amplifiers and the whole analog side that it's really, really different.
And they sound very different when you drive them. Play like four note chord on an analog synthesizer.
Yeah.
The analog circuitry of it, like any old analog class A analog, starts to distort in a certain way. When you have a virtual synth, it doesn't.
Well, you know, we've been over the synth versus the hardware version of that, and
but they're very useful.
Yeah, and I tend to agree. It's different sound. It definitely doesn't sound exactly like the hardware module. But you know, to kind of wrap this up though, it's just, you know, to see MIDI go off, you know, I felt a little nostalgic there, because you know, there was something about, you know, being able to work with all those cables.
Shows you how long I've been away. I had no idea that it had gone.
Well, it's still there. It's just hidden.
Thank you.
It's just become easy to the point. The thing is, it used to be able to make a living knowing about it. Now you don't need to know.
No.
So it is there, but it just doesn't matter.
Now in Logic, you call up the little thing, the little picture that looks like a keyboard or guitar. You open it up, and then it says, which program would you like? And then you play.
Yeah.
I can tell you this from experience, too. If you're nostalgic about MIDI now, wait till the first time you try to set up a USB network with a bunch of Korg modules and Yamaha modules and all this other stuff, and have your computer not be able to instantiate the instruments in the right order and have some of them not show up, and then find out your drivers don't match, you'll be really, really nostalgic for MIDI.
Yeah, you'll be going back.
Well, I've lived that. I've been through it a bunch of times, and it's an absolute nightmare.
Yeah, that's true.
MIDI never required a software update.
So what that means is there is work for somebody who knows what they're doing.
That's right.
So all the work you had for MIDI, now you become a network programming guy, because all those composers that put it all together, crash and you go, hey, talk to Mike.
Let's see. The last system I put together, well, that was yours, Martin, and it's working fine, isn't it?
Still working.
There we go.
Still working.
Yeah. All right. Well, I just want to move on. The other thing I wanted to talk about really quick was – this about 2 weeks ago now, there was an earthquake that happened in Southern California. And I just wanted to know how your guys' studios fared. Anybody have any damage? Anybody have any speakers?
No, it was fine.
And fell out?
It was that little
It was like a 5-point something
it
or
was,
another.
It wasn't jolting at all. Nothing in the studio moved.
I was just curious if anybody did any cause
the only
I,
thing in my studio that moved where my cats usually are sat
right.
as they watch me write, they weren't there.
Oh wow.
They'd gone to other areas and I had to
they
find
knew.
Them. They knew. They hid away. I had to go and find them.
Well, I remember your studio, you put all the straps in because I know in the Northridge earthquake.
Oh, that was a nasty one.
It took a hit.
Yeah, that was a nasty one. And you know, I was actually out in the car when this one happened and I just thought one of my tires had gone down. I pulled over and thought, a bit wobbly this. Lexus is a bit wobbly. And then I saw everybody running out of the buildings and I thought, okay, get on home and see what it was, you know. But it reminds you of how frail you are,
right.
you know. I think the biggest thing about it is you think, okay, we are just running around like little insects and it only just takes one move, a bit bigger than this and we're in trouble, you know.
So nobody, no speakers falling,
no.
anything?
Touch wood.
In 94 is a different story.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I lived in Northridge and I was in the middle of a mix and I... About 2 o'clock in the morning, I was tired, and I said, I'm going to print this in the morning. And I literally had the DAT in pause record. You know, when you listen through it, just right. the final stage of the mix, I'm thinking, I'll print it in the morning. And I took out a record, ejected the DAT, put it on top of the machine. I'll get some sleep and come back in the morning. That studio never worked again. that studio, everything got ripped. I had Elcos on my 24 track, ripped out the wall, everything.
Wow.
Just rolled.
How bad that earthquake was, my piano moved from one side of the room to the other side of the room and was on its side. That's a piano.
Yeah. It's gnarly.
Gnarly stuff, yeah.
And when people tell us that, you know, the Santa Monica Mountains went up 2 inches. I mean, you think,
Santa Clarita is 1 inch in a different place.
I know.
The whole city.
When you start talking that power, I suppose, 24 track moving across the room, speakers falling off.
So now in your studios, do you have earthquake? I know you do, Martin, because I know you.
I do in the old room. I don't in the new room. But,
I thought
Bobby helped me strap it down. And it's a very movable sort of kind of situation that is. Yeah, so I'm safe in, you know, if it's not too heavy, it'll rumble and move. And I've got a lot of straps and sellotape.
I could tell you a good suggestion for people that have a studio. I've strapped my whole place up. You can't see it, though. You can buy these rubber bungee cords. I don't know if you're hip to these rubber. They're actually black rubber, and they come with little steel silver S's on the end of them. But if you take the S hooks out of the end of the rubber bungees, they have nice little holes through them. And if you buy big enough washers, and these bungees come in, I think, 6, 8, 12, 15, quite long lengths, about 5 good long lengths. If you take them off and put good screws in them, you can actually screw them into the back of your, you know, whatever speaker you have,
right.
and then bolt it to the bottom of your table. And you just measure them out so that you make it so that if a speaker was to fall off, it wouldn't fall on your console.
That's what Bobby did for me.
See, that's what's good about MIDI cables.
Good. Yeah.
Because when the
earthquake
hit, I had all my keyboards were off the stands hanging from their MIDI cables.
And I bet the cable still worked afterwards as well.
That was great, you know.
USB would have crashed.
Oh, yeah.
The only thing I was thankful for in this last one that hit is I have a pair of Atom S3As that I love, and usually I have them on the little KRK speaker stands, and I got to the habit of taking them down when I'm not using them, and I wasn't using them, and they didn't go flying across the room, because those stands are not the most secure things because of the way the weight is. It's really top-heavy. Rob, how about your studio?
No, it was actually fine. I mean, I thought about it as soon as the quake hit. I did get there as fast as I could, but everything was fine. I think
where were you there, Rob?
Oh, when the earthquake hit? I was in the shower.
And don't ask me how I know. He told me that, I promise.
Yes, we were
wearing
the
Bobby. Oh, yeah. Come on.
No, he'd already rinsed off.
Pick it up the soap.
Yeah, exactly.
But I did think about it. A good friend of mine lives in Chino Hills where it was based, and anybody who was sitting right on top of it didn't think it was as minor as we did.
Yeah.
I mean, they really did get a good jolt, and I'm sure if someone had it was strong enough, if you had had a studio right there in Chino Hills, the speakers could have come down.
Yeah. Yeah.
But we were far enough away. I mean, it was noticeable. I mean, I definitely felt it, but it wasn't strong enough that I was worried that, you know, screens had come off the walls or anything like
gotcha.
That.
How about you, Andrew?
It was fine. I mean, you know, we're moving immediately. but nothing bad happened out in the studio.
Well, you were probably in a mix, so you probably thought it was just the.
No, I was actually in the house. I was in the house. I don't know why I wasn't working.
Playing that volume of Metallica, yeah. you wouldn't know.
You would have called that the chorus.
No, I mean it was big, but it was smooth. I mean, if you haven't been in an earthquake, it's hard to describe. But this was more of a rolling one, and the Northridge one was much more of a jolting.
And it was a lot closer.
And so this was not that. I didn't expect there to be a problem, and I went out in the studio, and it was all fine. And then power stayed on. I mean, there was no major effect.
I was on the sixth floor of in the studio where I work, and that was the first time I've been that
high. Did you sway?
Oh, yeah.
You got to go up to the 12th or the 13th floor, and then you get that really good swaying for about 2 hours.
Well, but that's the thing. If your building's built right, it's on rollers, so it moves even more than it would just from the earthquake.
The freakiest thing was I was in the studio, and it was quiet, and so I could hear, like, in the walls, you could hear, like, the metal, and it was really bizarre. That's why I knew it was like, well, this isn't going to be a small one.
When I first moved to California, I was in over at Taddeo, and this was old school post. And the old school, they used to have carts, like little A-tracks, around the walls. So if you needed something, you just grab it off the wall. And there must have been, I don't know, 500-600 of them. So when we first had the earthquake, they all start rattling.
Oh, no.
So I was a kid from Arizona, and all of a sudden, the whole room starts rattling, and Taddeo's built on rollers, and you look down the hallway, and the whole hallway starts snaking. So I pretty much thought at that point I was done for. Because I had no clue. I thought the ground was going to open up, and everything was shattering, and, So I had to pry my fingers off the door.
Well, hey, those are some good earthquake war stories. Notice that, when the earthquake hit, it was, okay, how am I? How's the studio? No, wait. How's the family? Okay, now how's the studio?
It's funny. In this last go round, I was doing DVD for Hellboy, and it was like I just thought the subs were doing their thing, and also we're like, I think we're having an earthquake. I was like, oh yeah, okay,
get back to work.
And yes, pretty much we kind of looked around. We said that wasn't too bad, and we just went back. It was like,
hey, if it wasn't for earthquakes, I'd never get to meet my neighbors. So
there you go.
But exactly. See, being in Santa Clarita, I'm not sure which is worse now. Earthquakes or fires. We got the plagues going on there, so.
Yeah, we'll find out when the hail.
I mean, every year we've had to almost evacuate our house, so. I think fires have now gotten much worse than earthquakes.
Yeah, I think so.
I would say so. Okay, well, I want to talk to you guys a little bit about another subject really quick before the break. I don't know if you know this, but, the iPhone came out, iPhone 3G. It's a small little phone. I don't know if you guys heard anything like that, but apparently there's an application that you can buy on your iPhone where you can control Pro Tools from your iPhone. And it's what basically happens is when you install the software in your phone, you install the drivers on your computer, it becomes a virtual mixing controller for your Pro Tools.
It's available at unnecessary.com.
Well, here's the thing. It's $150.
What?
It's $150.
Well, now, just to put it in perspective, the only reason I could ever think for having it is the same reason I have a transport, which is the wireless controller. Because let's say you want to record yourself playing an instrument that's across the room from the computer, you have a transport.
But the transport doesn't have the GSM buzz that the iPhone has, that little zzz, whenever you get it close to speakers.
And plus it has tactile buttons. Yeah. I mean, I like the transport.
I love the transport. I'm just trying to stick up for this guy.
Well, nice try there.
But it just got me thinking of all these wacky, crazy controllers and things that are coming out, and like you said, how unnecessary some of this stuff was. And I know the transport. I know, Martin, you've got a transport that you use.
That thing is great. It's just perfect. I mean,
it's great for me. I go into the old room, and where I like the sound in there, and the computers are good, 50 feet away.
Yeah, it's the way it should be.
And you can start and stop, right?
Yeah.
And I have mine sitting right in the middle of my console, so I'm not ever looking at the screen unless I'm editing.
I got the space bar.
And now,
I actually carry the transport around because I have so many synths, and every synth is hooked up as a MIDI master or slave. So anywhere in the whole place, you can use whatever keyboard you happen to be standing nearest to as your master.
Right.
And the transport just is like carrying, a Pro Tools control around with you or a Cubase control. It's great.
Well,
and you can change tracks and stuff like that.
Because you can cycle the tracks, right?
Yeah.
You can go to the next
Which product is this?
Frontier. This is transport. I basically, well, Mike set me up with it. It was just that I've got two rooms, and I always, the old room, I can't really see the computer from there, and I just love the vocals in that room. So the transport, I just sit in the room, in the old room with the microphone, 50 feet away, and just play with the transport. And you can move tracks.
Yeah, it's
a winner.
You know,
do 10 tracks in a row.
Drop Pro Tools?
Yeah, Control Pro Tools.
It's like a one-track Huey, but it's wireless, and it's got a foot switch input, so you can punch yourself in and out with your foot if you want to.
Is this the Frontier?
And it has a display, so you can
And what's the latency like on punching in, and is it...
It's fine. I never noticed anything.
Not as beautiful as the Studer. The Studer was sweet. This is just a little clunkier to the Studer, but you forget, you know.
Yeah. It's wireless.
You start to learn what its delay is, but it's good. It's really good.
So... I just wanted to bring that up because I was just curious if you guys would ever use anything like that.
You didn't spend $150, did you?
No. And believe me, that's like something, if it was like $49 or $39, I'd be showing it to you.
So the question, is there a difference between the phones?
Well, yeah.
3G is much faster. Right?
It's three.
The thing that's
more
cool,
expensive, isn't it?
Because I was working with someone who had Not one of the new iPhones, but obviously the iPhone Store was launched at the same time. Right. So even people with the old iPhones have all these stupid applications. But there was one, which I cannot remember the name of, but where you play any bit of music or hum it or sing it or hold it up to the radio, and it will identify it.
It
actually works.
Yeah.
And it's amazing.
We were
in the car and someone was playing and he just like, held the thing up for about 5 seconds, and not only does it tell you what it is, but you have a live link to iTunes to buy it or to the band's website. Yeah. Or
that's amazing.
It was crazy.
No, that's that. Yeah, no, I've got that.
And what's
it's
that
amazing.
One called? Is it Kazam? Or
Shazam.
Shazam.
Yeah, I've got
and
that
so,
one.
And that's now a verb.
You've
got to Shazam it.
Yeah.
You know, hey, what's that song? I don't know, Shazam it.
Yeah, there's other ones. It's amazing.
And it really works?
It works great.
It works great. I mean, if you're in a situation where there's more ambient than song, then it's going to get – it won't find it in its database.
It was pretty damn good.
Out of all the times I've used it, like, which has been probably about, you know, 10, 15 times, like twice I've been in environments where it probably couldn't hear it because it was noisy.
Does it do the whole iTunes catalog?
I don't think it has to be iTunes. No. I mean, that's just like – that's the Apple tie-in because they have it for other mobile devices, but you have to pay like per time.
Uh-huh.
It's completely free on the iPhone, and I think the deal is that if there's an iTunes link, it puts it on, and that's Apple's underwriting it.
That's amazing.
Yeah, there's some cool applications like
you can be in a church, you know, and they could be singing Bach.
Absolutely.
You can just hold up.
Yeah.
Brahms.
Seriously. Yeah.
The wrong key. Yeah.
Gregorian 1432.
Wow.
Yeah, it's just there's some really cool things on the iPhone. Like Beatmaker is a little sequence instrument program that actually is really kind of
difficult on 12 tone though, Bob.
A little tough,
doesn't read 12 tone. Not quite 13th century. Not so good on that.
Revert to the manual.
But the stupid thing is, it actually does. That's the scary part.
It's 12 tone. Woo, that is hot.
Shazam is a great app. But you guys, you'd never use a little remote control on your phone like that.
Free and I didn't have a transport, then sure.
There you go.
But $150. That's just. That's someone just
you know you're going to buy one, Mike.
No, I'm not.
You know you are.
No, I'm not. But because they have a $30 version.
That's way too expensive.
It is. It's
$150.
Talk about.
Buy me.
Nope. It's not going to happen. Uh-huh. It is not going to happen.
Okay.
Return it.
I mean, how much is the tiniest Pro Tools interface? Like whatever the
unbox.
Yeah.
That's only a few $100, right?
Yeah.
Well. To put in perspective, that software is the same price as the transport, right? Isn't
a
transport like $180?
Yeah, I'd buy a transport.
You can't make phone calls on the transport.
Which is good.
Yeah, but you could make phone calls without the thing the iPhone.
Yeah, and you're not going to be making a phone call during a session anyway.
Batteries don't last.
And plus,
as well.
If you do have to make phone calls during a session, you could use a phone.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
You don't have to use your remote control.
Yeah, can you imagine it?
Well, hey, listen, we're going to take a break right now.
And already?
Then when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about songwriting. We're going to catch up with Martin and his album and a couple other things. So we'll see you on the other side.
You're listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Apex and Westwave Audio. Have a question for the panel? Would you like to be a guest on the Audio Nowcast and live in the L.A. area? Email us at audio@nowcastnetwork.com.
Hey, welcome back to the Audio Nowcast. And we're going to talk a little bit about, we're going to talk about your release, Martin. It's been a couple months since your album in the Temple of the Muse came out. And, you know, we have a really unique opportunity because we've kind of been with you through the whole, you know, where you're going to the prep and everything and the release and with the live podcast. And it's a great album, by the way. And if you haven't picked it up, you can get it at martinpage.com. But tell us a little bit about how was the experience as you're looking back a couple months, and I know it's still selling pretty well. You know, just fill us in on some of your thoughts on
being
on the other
side.
It's
just been a brand new experience, and it's been an enjoyable experience. I mean, that's the main thing. It's been, you know, a great delight because it's a different way of working in the sense, you know, we put the record out and you sort of see, over a period of time, word of mouth, internet based, that we're getting, you know, sales now 2 months down the line, which are even better than when we started. So I think it's just a brand new feeling for me, because usually in the old days you'd be putting out a single and you would have a certain amount of time before something would happen. And of course for this record we saw it purely as a release of material that I possibly wouldn't have released if I was with a major record label. So it's been really rewarding because the people that are getting into it are the people that I've always wanted to appeal to. You know, it's always the people that like my music and have really supported me well. And through CD Baby, through iTunes, and through the websites, and through your help, Mike, you know, you find that you can, you know, release one song for 1 month that you push with a video, as you helped me with the Mi Morena video and the Blessed video. And then people get into that. And then the response we've been getting from real close response from fans, for me, in a small kind of, as I said before, bakery kind of situation, it's been really great because it encourages you and you realize that you're actually reaching out to people that like what you do. You're not just throwing it against the wind, you know. It's been great, and it's got stronger and stronger. If anything, you know, I'd expect after 3 months to see a little bit of a dimming, but it's actually got stronger and stronger. And in Europe, I mean, Germany and Italy and Spain, it's been really great.
And what do you attribute that to? Delay in it hitting over there, or however it happened?
It's an interesting thing. I would say it's because of people living with the music. I think that people were – the response I'd get from fans was more in the sense of, the longer I've lived with this record, the more I've fallen in love with the songs, the more I've got off on what you're trying to say. So it's been – what I like about a good book, you always try and write something that you think is going to last for a period of time. And I've been finding that it's been word of mouth. People have said, you know, hey, I didn't realize how strong this was. I like it. And I passed it on to my brother. In fact, I was in Barnes & Noble in Encino today, you know, and we've I'm just there as a sort of local artist. So they're selling my record there, and they've got it on Red Dot, which is this national thing where they play it. Well, we've got in-store play. And we're in that Barnes & Noble store, which is just around the corner from me. Mm-hmm. We are the best-selling album in that shop for airplay. Whenever they play it, we sell it, and people buy it. So we've had to, you know, go there and bring them more records. So it's just been encouraging because I haven't also seen it as, hey, we've got to achieve this. I've been looking at it over a period of time. I mean, I've got another record ready to come nearly. You know, it's encouraged me to say there's a market. I'd like to put out a body of work over the next few years, you know.
So you didn't do anything specific to change the strategy or anything with Europe?
Anything, my strategy was that let's not overpush this. I didn't want the stress of how it was with corporate situations. I really believed that the music would sell over a period of time. You know, I love bands like the Blue Nile and Prefab Sprout, Cocteau Twins, where they've got a body of work which will always find its place. And I'm writing now, without it sounding too corny, the songs I've always wanted to write. And if people get it, they get it. If they don't, they don't. It's as simple as that. And if it got into a situation where we were really trying to, and you know, at the period of my career now, it's like you want to be a little bit honest about what you're doing. So I'm at home doing the tracks I want to do. and putting them out on the internet and getting a nice response. You know, I mean, it was I was frankly surprised how well, without ramming it down people's throats and going to radio, how well it's done.
And what did you do for promotion?
Nothing.
No, you must have done something.
Well, we set up a website. We sent up a MySpace page, an official site. We did a few videos with Mike's help. Bobby helped me put the music together with mastering it. We
got Mike nude, ran down the street.
Yeah,
a
Mike
poster.
Naked pictures of Mike weren't actually too successful.
That was it. Yeah,
particularly in Botswana, it went really well. It was all into.
But so no feeding like MP3 bloggers or anything particular.
I blog all the time. I mean, I write all the time. I mean, every month I will write a blog or even.
You have enough of a presence that when you say there's an album coming out, there are enough people.
Well, I think it
to
was
hear that.
It was after the first album I had, House of Stone and Light. There was definitely a feeling for that record. People knew about it, so I definitely had a quiet built-in audience for that record. But we didn't go to radio. I basically wrote back to everybody who would write to me. You know, so if there was somebody who loved In the House of Stone and Light, when we started the website up, and they would write to us, we made a whole year. We started to write back to people. And we were on MySpace before the album came out for nearly a year. So it was living off of the previous album, but feeding back. And it was, I said this before to Mike, that it makes such a difference that people go, is it really you talking to me?
Sure.
Yeah.
And I get off on it. I like
That's
doing
brilliant.
It.
Yeah.
And I love writing blogs. And then we would become very personal. So, you know, you're not going to sell as much as Metallica. But
don't need to.
Not as an individual artist. You know that what you're doing. And, of course, we use YouTube for interviews. So Mike filmed us talking about the record. So.
Yeah, I will say that Martin and Diane, they were pretty smart in using the media, because we kind of got together and if there's one word that I can say that really helped his presence, was there's a certain amount of honesty.
A certain amount.
No.
Don't go all the way.
Not too much.
Right. You're right.
Just a certain amount.
There was honesty in everything. You felt like you were really getting to know Martin. Like, we did some interviews and where you could actually, you know, where Martin went into his songs and went into you know, the motivation and what inspired him. And then we did some performance videos that were just, you know,
very intimate.
Great performances.
We just finished Mi Moreno with Mike, and that's gone onto the MySpace page today. And that was what Mike is saying there, because I love songwriting, is that I would also talk to everybody who wrote songs. So if anybody was a songwriter and they'd write in and say, you know, how did you do this? How hard can it be to sit down for 3 hours and write back to these people that are interested in songwriting? I think that was a big key, is I love to write blogs. I found that, you know, when you're signed to a major label, you don't see the fans until you go out and tour.
Right.
What's great about a MySpace page or your website or YouTube is you are, you know, communicating in some ways in a more personal way. You know,
well, you create that community. There's, I don't know if you've been to his MySpace page, but there's definitely a community. You see people that post regularly, and you see the feedback and comments, and it really, you know, it's that sense of being part of something. Because I think, like, these people, especially the ones that have been on your MySpace page for a while, they've seen your album, they've heard mm-hmm. about you, you know, the trials and tribulations of getting it going and getting it out, and now that it's out, and it's really kind of cool to see that community.
For me personally as well, because of all the years we've been writing with everybody, it's brand new to me. So it's almost, I keep on saying it, but it's like we have this little bakery, and then every week, you know, CD Baby will say, we've sold this many, and it was from these people in Spain and these people in Germany. And you start to think, well, this is lovely. You know, it's not where you're up against the wall. You're actually doing what you want to do, you know. And if you get a good response to it, from people that genuinely like what you do, you know, the magical thing is I went into Barnes & Noble a couple of times and I heard it playing in the shop, uh-huh. you know, and I was stood there, you know, buying a DVD. And
did you cry?
I did. I bought 16 myself. But I saw people walking in and asking about it, you know, like, what kind of crap is this that's playing?
If I buy all the copies, will you make it stop?
And the answer, yes.
So now you're seeing sales grow as time goes on.
That's true.
And I'm not to get into a huge debate about this because, you know, we've covered it a few times. But my feeling in my gut has been that a very large amount of the blame for what has happened to the record industry has been laid on illegal downloading, and I don't believe it. Mm-hmm. I think that all of the other factors that have been documented are a much, much bigger effect. You've only released it online. Presumably, there's no digital rights management involved with any of the digital forms unless it's through a place that puts them on.
Yeah.
And well, yeah, your sales are increasing. I mean, I would imagine there are plenty of people who file sharing your record because it's out there. But it's not. It doesn't seem to be adversely affecting your sales at all.
If anything, it's because one person is playing it in a car and they hear it and they say, well, I want that too. I want to see the lyrics. And because my music might appeal more to having a CD and you might want to see the lyrics. That's also, you know, it's not single based. It's an album based oriented thing. But you're totally right. I'm seeing more sales now consistently in certain areas than we saw in the first month when it first came out. The first push came and we saw nice sales. But now it's really consistent to the point where it's made us say that we've got to press some more, you know, and which we didn't expect to be saying around September. I totally didn't, you know. And the feedback you're getting is what I'm, you know, how I did when I was a kid. I used to love, you know, buy something like Elton John selling England and Genesis selling England by the pound, and you just live with this album for a long time. And I'm finding, which gives me a great amount of joy, is that people are living with the record for a long time. They're not just saying, that was nice, yeah, pretty good. I'm getting them talking about songs that are hidden. You know, Song 7, people are discovering now. And if you look on iTunes, which I'm having great fun with, you see what they say that, you know, the best songs that they...
Yeah.
And you see them moving about, and they're discovering these things. And, you know, it's very optimistic, because you know that they're getting into... For me personally, they're getting into what you do. And I've never, ever really done that consistently. So it makes you excited about putting another record out. When I'm at home now, as I'm recording the next record, I'm excited because I know who my fans are.
And specifically, you obviously did some physical manufacturing, so you have CDs. And then for the digital, you've done CD Baby.
Yeah.
And did you use one of the aggregators to get you in all of the different places?
Well, CD Baby does that. They have these different situations where they...
Right, so you just use their service to get in iTunes and whatever else it is that they license.
For me, I'm sure to people out there as well, is to find a good bunch of people that you really trust, not to be too stressful on the situation, and make it simple. Well, it's been a great delight because it's been simple. Anything that gets too complicated doesn't become fun. You know, Mike's helped on the creativity. Bobby's been there. Everybody, my manager has been with me for years. And, you know, Vanessa, a fan who helps us out on the East Coast with the MySpace page. It's been a great delight because... It's been simple. Whenever we've seen, even we've had distributors come from different countries and say, we want to put it out, we want to do this, we look at it, we go, like, complicated.
Yeah.
Complicated. And could be pressure. Let's just go the way we are. Let's see.
Because it turns out you're already out in Spain.
Yeah. Exactly.
I had one question about the CD Baby stuff. Did you find, because they do aggregate to all the digital download places, and they'll also, you know, You end up in their search engine, so if people are searching for your kind of music, you can, you know, be discovered that way on their site. And a lot of people do go to CD Baby to discover new music. Have you found, did they do any kind of promotion, or did people hunting for new stuff on CD Baby end up resulting in sales?
Well, it's interesting. They tell you, you know, every day who's bought your record, and they tell you how the person who's bought it tells you how they were referred to your record. So you see them say, you know, word of mouth, or my brother had it, or I saw a video on YouTube, which has been really beneficial. YouTube has been really good. But CD Baby will just, because we did very well at the beginning, we were number two for a long time in their charts. They would rate it as their best pop record, pop rock record. And they would sort of push it to say, if you're looking for pop rock, go here.
Okay. And did end up helping.
We're still finding this fun, because I'm looking at it going, oh, that they saw two YouTube videos. That's what made them buy the CD. And then that led them to the official website. The cool thing is, and I think a lot of people can relate to this, you suddenly see all these situations in a digital world where you can go, yes, let's do this, let's do that, let's go to Rhapsody, let's do that, let's do a video blog every week. And you go, like, let's let the music speak.
Yeah.
Let's just let the emotion speak. For me, that's been, I find myself when I go on to, Bobby and I, we sort of send YouTube videos and I'll look for Arvo Pärt, you know, and I'll find this music by Henrik Górecki, you know, the Third Symphony, and you'll look at these videos and go like, that's stunning. And then I find that I'm buying everything by Arvo Pärt.
Uh-huh.
And that's something that I shouldn't find out about because it's underground. There's a beauty in underground and emotional music. You know, I found myself moving from Arvo Pärt across to John Taverner. Uh-huh. And then from John Taverner, you know, you go back to the Beatles and you find this stuff. And I think half of the thrill for a fan is to find something that you're not supposed to find. Yeah. And it's not too much in your face because you get a bit put off by that, especially if you're trying to get into something a little more that you want to live with for a period of time. You know, because there's so much noise, it's so fast and so quick. That I think I'm getting a buzz now because I'm being found out the same way I would have found out about Arvo Pärt.
And the beauty nowadays too is the fan can pick what the single is.
Yeah.
You know, you don't have to do some heavy marketing push and shove it down people's throat. You can actually be an artist who the fans will discover and fall in love with, and it doesn't have to follow the old.
Yeah.
I'm sure you used to deal with the labels.
There's a huge temptation because when you do come out, everybody comes to you and says, we can do this, we can do that, you should be here, you should be seen on this, you should be heard. And it's been quite nice to go, no, you know, that's just going to be a lot of work and a lot of studying. Let's just, and CD Baby's great. I mean, everybody who
does CD Baby take a piece of the action, or how does that work?
Yeah, I mean, for instance, they'll take $4 if you sell your CD for $14. They'll take $4, and you'll get your $10, and they'll send you the money each week. They'll tell you who's bought it and how many you've sold, and you just, it's like having your own distributor, mm-hmm. and you just go in and see how you're doing it. But my friends that have bought the record and people, fans have said they're great to work with. CD Baby still has that feeling of going into an old record shop. You know, you can even look on the front page and see all the album covers, and they say, do you want to see some more album covers? It's like we used to do in the old days when we used to flick through the vinyls. So it's got a vibe to it still.
Where the competition is in that stuff, just as a quick aside, the competition is in all the different companies that can get you to iTunes and Napster and Rhapsody and all those places. They all have different deals for the way they work. I think for actual physical CDs, though, everybody's kind of gotten used to the fact that CD Baby's where you go, just like most people go to iTunes for the digital. But if you're a new artist, you don't have to use – you can have CD Baby do everything, or there is some competition now. But like Martin says, that's when things start to get complicated. CD Baby is elegant because they do everything.
They're also linked to one-stop chains and quite a few of them. So we see a lot of sales from people that are little one-shops
all
across the country. That they walk in and they'll say, you know, I want that record. And they'll say, well, we have to go through CD Baby to get that. But they are linked to most some underground record shops.
Definitely.
As well, which is
cool. They're very well connected.
Yeah.
One thing I've noticed that the simplicity of the release has allowed you to do is not be so stressed as far as on the details.
What do you mean by that?
Well, I just remember back in your last album and, you know.
I was a nervous wreck.
But you can just take your time. If you want to call these people, you can call these people. But at the same time, you don't have to release something until it's ready.
And
you know?
The great thing is you see it over a period of a year. You know, you say, okay, this is, I think people are going to, you know, get into this over a period of time. And it encouraged me to put another one out. You know, you realize that you've got some people that get what you're doing.
Right? Well, and also, as soon as it's ready, it's out.
It's out, exactly.
That's, well, I mean, like the thing we were saying with the Metallica record coming out a month after it's finished. I mean, there's another record I finished before that might be out in October, you know.
Yeah.
That's endless.
Yeah. And I think, you know, to help the people that are doing this as well, is it does really help to write back to people.
Right.
You know, when they do buy your CD and they do say a few things, you should be very grateful that they've spent $10 on you, because it's not easy to go out and buy something these days. It's you know, I'm still amazed that people want to, you know, and with all the noise going around, they want to single out something that they care about. So I think it's, for an artist, it's important if you can write back to some people that have shown faith in you. It makes a big difference. I mean, I've got fans that I know personally that were there a year ago, you know, and they, every time you write a blog, they write to you. They've read your blog. And of course, if you get someone like Vanessa, a fan who helps me out with the MySpace page, who's so dedicated, then if you've got a good little team that you that enjoy doing it for you, then it can be a lot of fun.
Yeah.
And MySpace is still by far the biggest force for keeping in touch with the fans. Everybody says, you know, Facebook is coming up and everything else. There is nothing that creates that kind of community the way MySpace does, including your personal website, because in MySpace, people can sort of find their way to you a lot easier. It's almost like a commitment when they go to your personal website, which they will do once they know about you. But there's something about being on that MySpace community that is just amazing.
And also, you know, if you're an artist too, I want to, you know, say that Martin, you know, he takes his job seriously because he really, you know, I'm just going to, you know, give you some kudos here, buddy. But he writes back to a lot of the people that write in for comments. He'll write back. And also anything that's released on his MySpace page, it's gone through numerous levels of quality control and checking to make sure that's the best thing out for the fan. I mean, we're up to version 22, you know, just on the color correction, because Martin cares enough to make sure that that it looks perfect.
So you're saying he's a huge pain in the ass. Yeah. That's what you're saying.
Do it again, Mike! Do it again!
Don't hit me!
Make me look better!
So, no, you're right. That first one was better.
No, well, you know, you got issues with color and the web and things like that, but you just, the point is
by just, the way, Mike did a great job on this little video we've done for Me Moreno. He did a terrific job, and I'm very, very pleased with it. Very proud of it, actually.
And it's up today?
It's up today,
Actually, we're gonna put it on our Audio Nowcast, too. We're gonna link it.
Well, and just to tie this into a way previous podcast. I mean, this is all the stuff when Roy Ashen was here.
Yeah.
He was talking about setting up his MySpace presence and things. That's exactly what he was saying. And he's just finished his record,
which
he's going to have out soon.
Yeah.
But it's exactly it.
I'll find a link to that, because that's actually a great podcast for people to listen to. Listen to Roy Ashen when he was on here, because he gave some great advice.
And he practices what he preaches, you know, and he's also just made a great record. Yep. So. Mm-hmm.
But
did you mix it? You mixed it, right? No.
No, I didn't.
Oh, you did? Okay.
No.
The point is, though, is it's at least, you know, Martin, you know, if you're going to be an artist, you have a little bit of responsibility just to not put
There's
stuff
no doubt about
there.
That. You've got to, you know, stay on top of your website. And you've got, to me, the website is the shop. You know, that's the bakery again. You know, if you're going to have people come in there, you want to make it a pleasant experience for them. And I think people respond to knowing that you're active, that you will write back, you know, that you are looking at your website. So many people have websites that you can tell they're not being, you know, worked on and being looked at. And
I'm one of them. I haven't updated my website for about 9 years. I swear, it's terrible.
But you know, if you have something coming out, you know that's your window to the people. You know, it's the shop.
The bottom line too is once you build. We've talked about this before too, but once you build that personal relationship with the fan. Not to put it in a kind of cold way, but they're much less likely to rip you off. They're much more likely to buy the product if they feel a personal connection with you.
Another good thing about this is you bring up there is that when they are sort of unified in helping you, and they enjoy seeing a little bit of your success because they feel closer to you, they'll also take that video and they'll put it on their own website.
Yep.
And they'll also recommend you to their friends. And so it's, you know, it's spreading out. It's a handshake. They'll take a sample of your song and they'll put it on their website. Every time I've had a new friend, you know, I go and look and check on their websites. And many times they've taken one of your tracks and put a sample of it up there for their friends to hear. And you think, well, that's just wonderful. That's real promotion. And promotion from the heart as well.
Well, that's that, you know, you tell somebody, they tell somebody, it keeps going.
Oh, that's the best
going.
Promotion there is people getting it from people they trust.
Mm-hmm. And the myth for the last several years is that you tell one person and then they just put it up for free and you never see another penny. And it's not,
that's not
the
true.
Case.
I agree.
That's not the case at all.
Have you done any live performance to support it, or haven't
you?
No,
you know, it's a lot of people have actually recently been asking about that because there had been, you know, a buzz sort of, you know, people have been wondering why I'm not out there, you know, doing it. But you sort of need to, I think we'd have to see a little bit more of a consistency. It's beginning to build, and I've always thought, no, there won't be that situation for this. You know, I'm just going to roll on. But if it keeps on going the way it is, there easily could be a situation where
it's going to happen sometime. Where we would,
my dream is to get the next record out next year, early next year. Then I feel like it brought me another body of work out. You know, I got a big buzz out of seeing 20 of my songs on iTunes, and I thought, well, I've been much too precious about my work. And seeing that I'm so incredibly old now, it's important. It's important to, you know, you get a buzz out of saying, yes, I'm gonna. And as you get older, you tend to let go easier. You tend to go, this is good. I've been going back and reviewing work I've done and then redoing it and getting a great buzz from that, because in those early days, you judge yourself so heavy against commercialism that you might not even put your best stuff out.
Yeah.
See, but I think, you know, in the Temple of the Muse still has some legs. I mean, whenever I play it for somebody, they end up buying it, and it's gonna happen. That's the great thing is you don't have those artificial time limits on your album. You know,
that's very special to me.
Can release a new album, and yet the other one can still have legs to keep growing. So I think, Martin, just on my own personal speculation, I think it's gonna go. I think somewhere down the road, you're gonna be playing some live stuff.
It also must be really satisfying to know that it's only based on the album. And your relationship and, you know, all the other things you're doing to help support it. But that there's no way you could ever look at it and say, oh, well, it's because I was on, you know, The Tonight Show or this radio push.
I get the best feeling when somebody really relates to a song. And in fact, you know, we posted that video of Blessed recently, and we had a comment where, you know, a young lady had lost her brother, but her brother had wanted to use that song, you know, for getting married. And just hearing somebody respond to the song really means a lot to me, because it's nothing to do with anything but the power of the song. And I'm a songwriter, so, you know, it's for the first time in my life, we're doing it intimately, and we're just saying, hope you like the music. And when you get that kind of response, for me now, it's everything, you know, it really is.
Let me ask you a question. First of all, we're not going to be talking about songwriting tonight because we're running out of time, but this is definitely a great conversation, so I didn't want to cut it short. But in your record, since you have this feedback with the people that have bought it and your fans, are there any surprises as far as songs that you didn't think were going to do as well as they did, and all of a sudden you're like, wow, that one's connecting? Or what was one of those surprises, or were there any like that?
Well, there was. I think the song Try came through. I funny enough, I was in Barnes & Noble again, where I'm always buying my books, and everybody who worked there came up to me and they all said, you know, we love this song Try, you know, and the ladies particularly. And I had a lot of mail about that song. That song seems to have really, I didn't expect it to be quite that kind of response. You know, that was a surprise to me. And, Song for Ruth, which was a very personal kind of meditation song hidden away down the line. That I've had a tremendous amount of mail on that from people getting the feeling of it, you know, that it was relating to my parents. That's really great, you know. I mean, that's what I've loved as well, is people have found the mail I'm getting now is every time I listen to this, I find something new. And I'm living with this as well as I did with House of Stone and Light. And I don't want this to sound like it's an ego trip, but I tend to want to make music that people want to play more than once, you know, and go in farther. You know, I love tapestries, and I love albums that I want to keep playing. That when I do play a year from now, I go like, oh, I really like this. So I sort of strive for that. You know, you don't always achieve it, and you never get it totally right. But if you do find people, I'm finding what I loved when I was a kid, I'm having people write to me and saying, you know, I can play this Mi Morena for a year, and it'll always touch me. It'll always get me. It's on my iPod. It's one of my favorite songs. And that to me is why I started, you know. I've still got, you know, Fool on the Hill by the Beatles on my iPod. And people are talking to me in that way that they're saying, you know, I'll always play House of Stone and Light, and I'll always play, you know. I think as a writer, you just hope that people get that, you know. And I didn't write this album commercially. And that's something that I've never done before. You know, I wrote it like, hey, I feel good about this.
Well, you know, that just shows the honesty, you know, the honesty of the whole album. Not just a little bit either, just a whole big truckload of honesty. Well, you know what, Martin? It's been great. It's been great going on the ride with you on the whole album thing. It's been fantastic because
I'll have another one for you soon.
I'm looking forward.
Where are
to
you
that.
Out again?
But I just remember, you know, I remember when this whole thing started way back when we put together the studio.
It's been a good feeling.
And you, it was just, you know, an idea and you were just like, oh no, it's not. And you know, and you were doubting yourself and sure enough, the album comes out and
it's a good feeling. Know, it's a good feeling. Yeah.
It's good to see you.
Keeps you busy. Gives you something to do, you know? It's true though. Human beings, we get too bored. We have to be inspired. So it's been good. It's been good.
So it's
been
great.
The idle mind is the playground of the devil.
That was Bobby Somerville, by the way.
So, well, you know what? We're going to have to talk about songwriting on another podcast because, you know, we can't just do 2 minutes on that. So, we will make up and do the songwriting with partners and some of the horror stories and things out there, on a future podcast. I do want to say though, I do have a story, speaking of songwriting, really quick that I want to tell you guys. I have a daughter who's 5 years old. Okay. And, she came up to me and we got her this little guitar and she's playing it and she goes, "Dad." I go, "What?" And she goes, "I wrote a song with my friend Lucy." And I said, "You wrote a song with your friend Lucy?" And she goes, "Yeah." And she's 5. And I go, "Okay, well, what's the title of the song?" And she goes, "I Can't Handle It in My Head." And then she goes and she sings this song. And, you know, she's just playing this one chord on the guitar. And I go, "That is so great." And you have to understand, her friend Lucy, it's her imaginary friend Lucy.
Okay. So do they split the publishing?
And so I go,
"Interesting."
I go, That's a great song. Do you have any others? And she goes, "Oh yeah, I have another one." I go, "What's it called?" And she goes, "Girls Night Out." And so she starts playing and then she points to me and she wants me to say, "No, you said Girls Night Out." So she's playing, yada, 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 yada. And then she points and then I have to go, "Girls Night Out."
You did that very well.
And I'm like, wow. Mm-hmm. There's 5 years old and she just has a concept of a song. I'm looking forward to that. My advice that I need from you guys, do we go guitar or do we go piano?
Piano. The guy who was working with me on the Metallica record, his son is, I believe, 5, maybe 6 now, and a huge Beatles fan, as most kids that age seem to be, but doing the same thing. But he writes Beatles songs. He doesn't write his own songs. He says, "Well, no, these are Beatles songs." But every single one of them has the word bread in the title. So there's Bread Sally. But my favorite is, "There's Bread on the Roof, Get It Off." But fantastic. And he's not writing his own songs. These are Beatles songs.
These are Beatles songs.
Fantastic. Yeah, my daughter, she's writing her own songs. And I'm really jazzed. That's I only great. Got a little worried when I actually thought about the title, "I Can't Handle It in My Head."
Pretty cool title.
Yeah. That's kind of funny, though. So we'll see. We'll see. We'll have to. I'll have to give you an update when we do
but
the
piano first, and then guitar shortly after.
Yeah. Really?
Fretless bass. Yeah, a little bit of fretless bass.
Tambourine.
No, we're
bagpipes.
I was talking.
Million pipes.
Yeah. I'm serious though. I was really trying to figure out because she loves music. She sings and she just.
Does she like to play guitar?
She loves. She just strums this little guitar that I got all the time. But she also, if we had keyboard, when I have some keyboards there, she bangs on the keyboard.
Whichever one she'll actually play.
Definitely.
It doesn't matter.
It's not bad having both around. Just encourage her.
I figured.
And a rhythm instrument too. Like just get a
drum. Yeah, some kind of drum.
Little hand drum, something like that. It's great.
Yeah.
So we'll see. Maybe I can retire. Yes.
Have you not been listening to these podcasts?
Exactly.
No, but all right. Well, hey, we're gonna wrap things up. But it's great to see all you guys.
Yay!
Good to have the gang back together. This has been really kind of fun. Martin, thank you for taking
My
us
pleasure,
in.
My pleasure, Mike. I enjoyed it
and giving us some, you know, really great perspective on. On your album, and I think everybody out there on the
it was great to see everybody back here. The team hasn't changed. You're in a great vibe, and I know you've got the website sorted out, Mike.
Oh yeah, iTunes is fixed. Our website is fixed, so that's good. I don't have the new theme loaded yet because I just fixed it. You know, here's the perfect example. I had two guys that were going to help me, and each one flamed out at their own time. So I just got a book and did it myself. And
that's what it takes. Sometimes
way more confident in it. And
I have to say though, I've noticed that the language has been really so much
Oh.
Sorry.
I feel better now.
And I haven't sworn the whole night. Have you noticed? I've been trying to be so good the whole night. No, I can't.
Go for it, Bob.
Andrew was brilliant. No, I can't.
You know what the whole key was? The whole key is Scott's here to sit between you and Martin.
The buffer.
That's right. You get two English guys.
And I've had 2 hours sleep as well. I'm sitting there going, oh, no. Otherwise, I'll be back to swear.
But really quick, Rob, what are you up to? You up to anything yet? Are we still waiting?
I'm actually getting real close to being allowed to talk about some of the things I've been working on. We've just finished our second of two interactive projects, video games that are going to be hugely promoted by a huge company that we did them for. And I think by the next podcast, I can talk about one of them.
Great.
And we're also doing a scoring the original music for a theme park attraction, which I'm supposed to deliver the final cues tomorrow. So I think by next podcast, I'll be able to talk about that too. But it's for a theme park in Europe, and it's actually been really cool. We got the job sort of out of the blue with a client we'd never worked with before, and it's a really intense motion simulator ride. And they really didn't know what to tell us that they needed musically. They just said, we like what we heard on your demo reels and just come up with something. So we came up with something completely bizarre, and they just loved it. So it was about 6 minutes long, and it's been really, really fun to do something that has, even though it is for a corporate client, it really had no creative limitations because they had no idea what was going to work.
Hey, when you were scoring this, did you have Gary shake your chair so you could kind of get into the vibe of the whole simulator?
No. No, we didn't. Andrew, there's been a lot going on, but I'll be able to talk about more of it soon.
And Andrew, we know Metallica, small little band, little indie.
Yeah, but right before that, well, I helped Roy Ashen finishing up his record, ended up sort of additional production, but just, you know, listening to mixes for him, giving him ideas, and it turned out great. And also worked with this band, Audrey Sessions, from the Oakland area, produced a few songs for them, which was a lot of fun, and that's through a small label through RCA, so that's getting a little... Apparently, they did a gig in New York for the label, and they had 100 people from the label show up and just get blown away. So,
wow.
So maybe someone will actually hear of this band, which is good. Wow. And tomorrow, I'm going in the studio with my son to record one of his songs.
Oh, all right. That's awesome. So,
which does not have bread in the title. But,
not yet, anyway.
Yeah.
And Bobby.
So busy.
How about you, Bobby? You've been kind of quiet. I know you've been tired. You haven't got much sleep.
I've been tired. I've been double dating here. Actually, I've got three music projects on the go, which are pretty cool. Mostly songs. And one for, I'm doing a 10 track package for One Life to Live Again. But the interesting side thing why I'm tired is because for the last 7 weeks, I've been studying market making. And, you know, I don't know if you guys know, I'm into trading, stock market trading and stuff like that. So I just got done with that pretty much. And I'm just about to start, the next final thing, and been about a year study of that too, which is kind of fun. That's why I'm tired.
You're going to be a mogul. You're just going to own it all.
You know what? It's just nice. It's a nice way to make money if you don't need to. don't need to live in Los, you know, Los Angeles. I can live anywhere and do it, which is kind of fun.
And Scott, Hellboy 2, it's still out there.
Hellboy 2,
Got some people who just have just complimented your work, you know. And
it's good. I am a couple different things going on. I just finished on the video game side Fable 2 and Gears of War. Just finished the final mix last night.
Nice.
And then I'm in the midst of creating for a movie that you could figure out. Photon torpedoes and phasers and a big ship that goes by.
A little independent film.
A little independent film is what I'm designing right now. And also, one of the films that I did in the winter is finally coming out. It's kind of like an album, you know?
Yeah, that...
It's called The Express. It's coming out October 10th.
I've seen the trailer.
I'm really excited about it.
Are those your sounds on the trailer? Because the trailer has that really – that I remember you were telling me about the hyper-real, the hyper-reality.
Yeah, probably. I mean, they probably grabbed it from the film because the film's been out.
I would
imagine. We did a quick little fix about a week ago with some dialogue lines. But to me, you know, there's a lot of great films that you work on in different styles. And this to me is – it's got a lot of heart to it. And it's about a guy named Ernie Davis,
right,
who I think is going to become on people's lips soon because he's a pretty much amazing individual, or was.
Yeah.
And I recommend seeing the movie. I think it's one of the best work I've done. And the director, who I'm incredibly proud of, I think it's his best work as well. And
great.
Just a really good film.
Great. And Martin, you've got another album, you know, that you're working on. And
I'm concentrating on that very hard at the moment and enjoying it. In fact, driving here, I was just, you know, going through some rough mixes and stuff. I'm about two songs away from seeing the next one as a whole bulk of work done. So, you know, pushing this one that's out now and enjoying it and constructing something to follow it, which is a lot of fun. So I'm in a good space.
Have you figured out a time schedule when that is, or are you just not even worried about
it? I'd like to have this next one ready by Christmas, ready, you know, finished.
That's
and
great.
then to see where we are with the one with the Temple of the Muse, and then hopefully, you know, a couple of months after the new year, get the next one out and get a body of work going. Would be really cool.
That's great.
Yeah,
that's great. Well, I've worked on absolutely nothing and plan on not
you
doing much.
You worked on my video, right? Come on.
Well, yeah, that's true, too. I did your video, but as far as any outside work, I stopped that for a while. No films.
Lucky man.
I just, you know what? You get to the point where you just want to step back for a little bit.
Good.
I've got the day gig, and it's doing well, and so, you know, you just don't burn yourself out, because I was so close to just
folding. Did it a long time.
It was crazy.
You're doing the right thing there. The right thing.
It's crazy. Oh. And that's this week. Next week, I'm mixing three independent films. All right, Ken. Well, hey, it was good to see everybody. And hopefully we'll see you guys all at the next one. And that's about it. If you have any questions or comments, be sure to visit our MySpace page. That's MySpace.com/audionowcast, and you can also reach us at the audio@audionowcast.com. And hey, I want to thank all the listeners, the 14 of you that are left, for not bailing on us when we posted the first show. After a while, we've got right off the bat 200 downloads just like that. So I mean, people are starting to download us again and finding us again, and thank you for hanging in there. And if you're listening to us, obviously you didn't abandon us, and we won't let it happen again, man.
And we have a great engineer set behind us.
And Ken's back.
Yeah.
So the website's fixed, iTunes is fixed, and we're going to give it a couple weeks just to make sure it's all working up and everything's working good. And then we're going to be posting the first of our Audio Nowcast spaces. And so that'll be really exciting to see some cool video up there and some of the places that these guys work at. All right. Until next time, take it easy, and we'll see you. Bye-bye.
Thanks for listening to the Audio Nowcast, sponsored by Aphex and West Wave Audio. The Audio Nowcast is hosted by Mike Rodriguez with Rob Arbatier, Scott Gershon, Martin Page, Andrew Sheps, and Bobby Summerfield. The program is produced by April Mastropaolo and uses Aphex's 230 Master Channel Voice Processor. Thanks for listening. We'll see you next time.